There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 39. A little special Sunday night little episode for you. I mentioned last time that we'll have a bunch, we have ideas for some other content for you guys coming out besides the usual Thursday show. And with our ADP analysis, we haven't done Bloom boards. So we're going to do some Bloom boards tonight and chat that up. And also, Ryan twisted my arm like we talked about on Thursday to join a draft with him. So we're going to recap the top, 12, 13 picks or so, and kind of see where it goes because we've entered our analysis rounds of the draft. And it's actually helping me, but we'll get to that in a minute. You can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast on Twitter at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host is always on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're good. Yeah, feels a little different Sunday night going up against the Grammy. So I don't know if this thing's gonna do numbers or not, but we're trying. Thought it was like an awesome like convergence of us being in the same draft. The draft is in the like you're on the actually on the clock at 200 overall, which is like the exact like pockets of ADP that we've been talking about the last 3 weeks. So figured the timing was right to do this. And yeah, probably more two per week episodes coming up, more so than one. So I'm excited for that too, man.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Bloom and I like to just talk to each other in general, so we might as well talk about it on a mic. And we love talking fantasy baseball. And like I said, as we started doing Bloom boards, and that was kind of the fun that everybody looked forward to us breaking them down more on the show. We just haven't done them. Like we've loved doing the analysis thing. It's been really cool, and it's helped me a ton. Like I said, and I'm assuming it's probably helped you. Just like it's helped listeners. So we'll obviously keep doing that. But this is a couple of fun boards he's had come out lately, and like Ryan said, the draft that we're in is pretty interesting draft, and it's loaded with sharks as we mentioned before. And I'm on clock at pick 200. I'll make my pick after we discuss what's been going down so far. But Ryan did tweet out from the Bubba Bloom Pod account a picture of our first, I believe it was 13 picks or so that we both have. So Ryan, I'll give you the floor and let people know what you got going on through your first 13 and kind of how that's breaking down for you so far.
Yeah, you can check out the boards on, at Bubba Bloom Pod, which apparently this was a learning experience for all of us. But opening a new account on Twitter these days is not as easy as it used to be. I guess it's easy, but you don't like count as an actual account until you do X number of tweets. So basically, I don't think anybody could really find it until a few days ago. Once Twitter, Elon, whoever figured out we weren't a bot. So there'll be more to come on that account, including the board that we talk about tonight, our teams and that sort of thing. But I don't know, man. Like it's funny. I call this like the practice what we preach episode. It's so easy to sit behind the mic and look at ADP, look at projections and say, oh, you should take this guy. You should go with, one of these third basemen in this pocket. You should do this with pitching in this pocket. It's totally different when you're on the clock and actually drafting. So I kind of followed my own advice. So my start was Freddie Freeman, Realmuto. I went three pitchers after that. Middle rounds went with, so middle rounds, I'll talk, we'll start like eighth round or so. I took my third starter, Kyle Wright, and then went back with Lance Lynn, 8 and 9. Those were two guys. I know I talked about Lynn as a big target in the, was it 100 to 150 or maybe 150 to 200 show, and backed that up. Took Rizzo. Rizzo was a target that I talked about last week in the 10th. We did a, I remember doing a specific ADP battle about two third basemen with low batting averages, high power, and we both took the two guys, Eugenio Suarez and Matt Chapman.
You took Chapman. I was going to take Chapman.
I took Chapman in the 11th, yeah. And I have, I'm two, we're two picks apart to set, mm-hmm. to set that stage. So I'm 9th overall, Bubba, you're 11th. That is fun to hear that you were going to take Chapman. I think we both kind of circled. Agreed on Chapman.
Yep.
Did you?
Yep.
Went back with Dustin May in the 12th and Cody Bellinger in the 13th. I'll talk about those last two picks.
I really want you to, because when I saw those two picks, I'm like, oh, this is going to get fun, because
yeah.
those are two yeah. guys we were kind of not into on our recent episodes. So I'm really looking forward to hearing Ryan's. And this is where, like what Ryan said, it kind of the rubber meets the road thing. It's,
yep.
you know, roster construction, we say it and people get annoyed by it, but it's so true. When, like, you can have your targets, but when, you know, all these other people getting drafted around you, and then scarcity starts to hit in. I do want to bring it up before we get too deep. Steve Weimer, everybody knows, is an amazing fantasy baseball player and an amazing fantasy analyst. And I made a point to take a picture of this to remind myself. But he tweeted out, I'm guessing maybe he's got an article coming, I don't know, a look at positional scarcity in DCs, which we're in right now.
Yeah.
The number of above replacement level hitters eligible at each position. So he's got a whole thing based on SGP and everything. So if you do the math, you know, 15 teams, everyone's got two catchers. That's 30 catchers. There's only 30 above replacement level catchers qualified in baseball. So let that sink in real quick. If you wait too long and say someone gets a third catcher, you're already playing behind the eight ball there. Not saying you have to get crazy, but you got that first base 30, second base 33. So that kind of brings up something like, okay, there's 15 starting mm-hmm. second baseman. There's some middle infielders. Maybe that's a position you can wait on a little bit more per se, at least for your backups is an angle, something to think about. Third base, only 27. So if you want a decent backup third baseman, we'll talk about that shortly. You need to be a little more, at least in my mind, maybe I'm overthinking these, but I'm just, this stood out to me. Shortstop 28 shows you the depth is not as what we used to at shortstop, in my opinion. Outfielders only 90. I say only 90 because if you do 15 times five, do the quick math on that one, everybody, that's well over 90. It's 75. That's what I mean. 75. But so everyone can get a starter, but your backups, like you want outfield depth. That's the only thing we talk about. That dwindles quickly, and then there's a couple utility players, so do what you wish. But when I looked at that, I was like, outfield, okay, you got your starters. There's barely any outfield depth after that. Third base, shortstop, not even enough for two per team, unless you're like, who knows. Again, maybe I'm overthinking it. Step in and tell me if I'm wrong, but that stood out to me as like another part of the analysis process of like getting your depth, because we talk about like DCs, NFBC, 50s, any draft and hold. Yeah, you build your roster. It's cool. Your starting lineup, but we're all going to get injuries. We're all going to want to play the lineup games throughout the week. And if your backups suck, it doesn't matter. So, like, you have to have that depth where it's viable back depth. Because it's happened to me before. Like, I would think I was being cute on a position, and then I missed out. And I had, like, it was third base. I had, like, Alec Baum. I had to take Kevin Biggio and someone else, and you're just dead. You're playing dead in the water there. So you can get cute, but it's hard to get super cute, especially in a 15-teamer. So before I get any deeper, if you got anything on that to elaborate with, knock yourself out. But that stood out to me. And I'm like, that's perfect timing, Steve. Thank you for our show tonight.
No, that was a good tweet. And anyone who doesn't follow Steve, I absolutely should. Steve, the letter Y and then M-E-R. My big takeaway from that chart, and I thought this was really interesting, was he had the average SGP. So basically the average value. The average fantasy value for those starting position players. And interestingly enough, second base, I believe, well, outside of catcher had the lowest by far, which we expect around a 10 SGP. I think second base actually had the lowest average SGP yep. of any position, which is interesting because we all talk about third base. I think third base wasn't that far ahead of second base, but still second base was
better than the outfield.
Okay, which I can
outfield is right.
And well, base, that yeah. makes sense. That actually, and speaking as someone who drafted their second outfielder in the 13th round of this draft, I'll get into that with Bellinger pick as well. I can totally believe that. But that was a big takeaway. Was second base, you're right, and outfield were the lowest. And second base in this draft, you can see it right away on these NFBC boards because second basemen are orange. You have in this draft, it was all third round. Altuve, Semien, Jazz. Albies went in the fourth. Edmund the sixth. Jimenez the seventh. Gleyber Torres late eighth. And then there's not much. Like the next guy you took was the second baseman was from you, was Thairo Estrada, which was a round or two before ADP. I know you really like him, and that is practicing what you preach because that is your boy. And a whole lot of second baseman going like right around now, like 13th round. Yep. Jeff McNeil, Brandon Lowe, Luis Arias, Jake Cronenworth, Ketel Marte, round before this, Vaughn Grissom. So there's a lot of second baseman like in these kind of late to middle rounds, but the top end talent, if you don't get one of those like top five second base, it gets kind of rough.
Yeah. So our normal analysis then combining it with that really stood out to me because we're like saying, did our analysis help in the actual picks we made? Maybe not. Maybe it pushed guys up here and there, but what it's done for me, and I keep doing it when I start like, you know, clicking guys from my queue, is I already know guys I like in each pocket, like we've talked about, but I also know like ahead of time, I already got some pitching. I'll go through my roster. Let me do that first before we get into strategy.
Yep.
So I went with Mookie Betts at pick 11, and then something I've been preaching all preseason, and it could backfire, is how much power stung me last year. So I went Pete Alonso in round two. Yep. And I think combining that with Betts and his 20 to 25 home runs is nice. Then I went Francisco Lindor in round three. To me, he fell way too far in my mind. For the talent he is. And so I already have like a base of, you know, I got outfielder, first base, shortstop. I got good speed with Betts and Lindor. I got power kind of a little bit across the board, especially if Lindor keeps bouncing back. So I felt good enough there. Then I went with Presley to get a locked-in closer. We talked about this via text. It made me feel safer with that kind of avoiding closers for a bit. Then I went Zach Gallen, Robbie Ray. That was the conundrum. So we were texting about it. I was like, okay, so how do I get my pitching in a 15-teamer? I was very happy with the idea of Zach Gallen, Robbie Ray for waiting that long. I'm not crazy. We talked about, you know, the Coles and the Burns. These guys are elite. But for waiting that long, what I like the most about Gallen and Ray, both guys that will get you a ton of innings, more often than not, it looks like. Ratios will be much better, especially if Ray continues to improve the walks. Ray's a 200-plus strikeout machine. Gallen will get you about a K per nine. So just kind of everything together for waiting that long, because I looked at other pitchers in that realm. You know, there was Darvish, who I don't mind. Glasnow, I'm just not touching. Alec Manoah, that was Manoah and Musgrove were both in mind for me when I took Gallen. I don't know. I have issues with there where I think I know what Gallen's going to be. Could be wrong, but that pocket there is where I was looking. Then I went back to the outfield because this is what we talked about. Jake McCarthy, give me some more speed. Lock that in with the power I got earlier. Went Blake Snell in round eight, another pitcher, because my third starting pitcher, loved the second half. We talked about him a lot in the pocket episode with him. Then I went and got my boy William Contreras because catchers, weirdly enough, was starting to dry up. That I'm confident with my later catchers, but to get three that I liked, I needed to at least get one pretty quickly. That was where my mindset was. And I feel comfortable waiting a while again, but I wanted to get like one kind of locked in there. Went Thairo Estrada. I knew I had to go early, but it was kind of what you mentioned with the second baseman. I was kind of looking at the other second basemans going around him. It was between India and Estrada, honestly. I liked the flexibility of Estrada, especially with the chance he might get outfield thrown into that mix. There was a lot of interesting news that came out of FanFest on Saturday. They're already working with Estrada in the outfield. Yeah. They want, and Gabe Kapler said, as a team with the new rules, they're going to run a lot more, which plays right into Estrada's hands. It's all talk. I know it's all talk, but we have to go with what we know. These are all probably, and then the idea of them wanting to start in the outfield also, it just shows they want him in the lineup as often as possible, which gets me excited there. Could be overthinking it. Came back with Eugenio Suarez, Chapman. Ryan took him two picks before me. I was looking at both of them because third base is getting dusty quick. So I liked Eugenio in that respect. Another big power bat. I felt comfortable with my average and my stolen bases already, so I could take that. Went Mitch Haniger to get a third outfielder because, as Ryan mentioned, outfielder starts getting fun here pretty soon. So I got another guy that can get you 20, 25 home runs. Doubt he gets to 30 again, but you never know. And then I came back with John Gray, and that was a conundrum for me. I like Gray a lot. I wanted Brady Singer, who went like four picks before me.
Yeah.
I'm a big Brady Singer fan. I had him kind of circled, but then I went with John Gray, and there's a couple other people like Detmers went a couple picks later, DeShelly. There's some other targets there that are interesting. I went with Gray just because I know the innings were kind of low last year, but he's also battling an injury. He's supposed to be healthy. I love the potential with him in Texas. So I'll leave it at that, and we can kind of go back and forth when we talk strategies and whatnot. But I like the balance of my team. And the one thing for me, like I'm doing a 50s, a 12 at the same time. Bonkers how different those can be.
How do you do that?
Holy
I can
crap.
I can probably do two like 15 teamers at the same time. I have done it 15 teamers at the same time. But that mental switch from 15s to 12s.
It is so difficult. And I literally have to like take a second and like open it when I'm on the clock and kind of look at it for a little bit and kind of get my mind
recalibrate. Right.
Yeah, because it's like that 12, my team on that 12 right now, I want to go to battle right now. Like it's just ridiculous what's building there. But this 15, like I like the balance of it. What the pocket episodes we've done is taught me like it's almost like it's what we've talked about a lot on the show, look for stats, not names. And that's kind of where I've been focusing on things. It's been more positions and stats. Like Mitch Haniger's not like the biggest target of mine, but he fit where my team was going really well in that regard. Like I could have gone other outfielders like a Riley Green and hoped he got to 20 home runs, where Mitch Haniger, we kind of know who he is as long as he plays. And I'm a big fan of that at that point in time. I went for Eugenio because we've talked about how third base gets real dicey real quick. Just little things like that. I went to John Gray because there's another pocket of pitchers we like, but it's not for like another 50, 60 picks. So like, I want to get one here. We'll attack him. And that's us knowing the pockets now. And that's what I'm referring to is, you know, I might not get the guys I want that we've talked about as targets, but it at least allows me to like plan ahead and go, okay, I know coming up in this next group, I like two third basemans, four starting pitchers and like a second baseman, and a couple of outfielders. So I can kind of go, I need to get a first baseman in this pocket instead. Stuff like that, where it really helps me out there. So I've talked enough. What else do you have on this?
No, I mean, in the last couple of weeks, like you have been a little bit down on the pitcher pools in this part of the draft. And so I'm not surprised at all that you went from round 9 through 12, all hitters. So I do think like and every team in 15 teamers is going to have holes. We'll talk about my holes in a sec for sure. I do think Singer would have been an awesome pick for you in 13, just because it fit your staff. Like your staff, you didn't take a starting pitcher until the 5th round. So again, that's fine. It's and then you did go volume. You went 3 starters in those next 4 rounds with Gallen, Ray, and Snell. The only thing with Gray is just like the volume. So I think with your like kind of going forward, your starting pitchers, if there are guys that are more, I don't know, have that more volume background, I think that's a better fit. But who knows? I mean, Gray, like it was knee stuff last year, so maybe he stays healthy. And of
you
course,
mean Andrew, you mean Andrew Heaney's probably a bad option.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't come back with Heaney with your current pick on the clock. I'd probably avoid that.
I wonder why, Ryan. Why would I avoid that pick? Is there someone coming up that might want Andrew Heaney? I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm two picks away. So
I told you before that I'm gonna do my pick on air. It's not gonna be a pitcher. But to what you're saying is that I am aware. That's one reason why I was kind of hesitant to take Gray. I'm just like hoping that he's healthy. Give me like 165 instead of 140, and I'll feel a lot better because I'm confident in his strikeouts and his ratios in that ballpark with that team. So I'm at that point, but to your point also is I have a ton of guys for hopefully the next time around to me in that 230-ish range already highlighted in ADP of like guys I'm looking to target potentially either between innings or just like ratio machines so their innings are maximized, if that makes sense to anybody. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. I already have them all highlighted. And again, that goes to us doing pockets. Like that's why I kind of have done what I've done. It's a completely different draft than I've done a lot of places. I didn't want to wait till round 5 or 6 for pitching. I didn't, but the way things kept falling, like Lindor, I like a lot, and I think the more we've talked about shortstop's good, but it doesn't feel as good as it has in the past. I like what Lindor's doing. The fact he fell, it's like, okay, I'll take Lindor now instead of a pitcher. And like things like that where I adapted on the fly.
I thought, that is not the price you pay, but that's the calculus that you make in that third round. Cause I had the option to take Lindor 2 picks ahead of you. And I thought about it. I did. I took Max Scherzer instead. I just wanted to get, cause I knew coming back, like, and it turns out I could have got Kevin Gausman, which I already have a lot of, so I probably shouldn't have him in every single draft, but, That is that decision you have to make. And again, make on the fly. One thing that I tried and one thing that we've talked about these last few episodes, or at least I've brought up pretty much every week, is to try and piece together your stolen bases, 10 to 15 bags at a time. And that's what I tried and am trying in this draft. And that is actually why I started with Freddie Freeman. Actually, I really wanted Yordan Alvarez, but Alvarez went the pick before me. Might have been a blessing in disguise. That the thing with Alvarez, and I know we're kind of going off, but like Alvarez is, I think, pretty much a lock for zero steals. Where and that actually could really hurt if the stolen base environment picks up quite a bit. Like a zero hurts you a lot more than it would have in previous years. Yordan Alvarez is, I think, a top five hitter in baseball, so you're elite in those other four. But I started with Freeman. And trying to take this 10 to 15 bags at a time. Maybe Freeman gets me 10. I went JTR for about 15 after that. Dansby Swanson, 10 to 15. Tyler O'Neill, maybe 15, maybe 20 if like everything breaks okay. Rizzo, I was actually surprised. I didn't realize this. This is the benefit of looking at the draft. Has had six stolen bases each of the last two seasons. So I don't know. Maybe if he runs a little more, it's like 5 to 10. Chapman's a zero. Cody Bellinger, I took, is around 15. So I'm trying that strategy and I'm kind of liking it. I do think, and there are more, the guy I'm going to take also next fits into that strategy as well, of about 15 steals at a time. I like that strategy and it feels workable. And since it's workable, I am more comfortable to take Freddie Freeman, even Alvarez, even Vlad Jr. in the first round. I'm not dead set, or even like you when you took Alonso in the second round. I think that's totally on the table for me this year, just because it does really look like, and actually putting this plan into practice, you can build a pretty solid, like diverse foundation for steals 10 to 15 at a time.
Yeah, it's definitely an option. And just to kind of carry on, like you said about the zero kind of crushing you, I mentioned how Kapler said they want to run. There was a bunch of fan fest this weekend, so there's all kinds of different news coming out. Cedric, a follower of mine, knows I like Cedric Mullins, and he said, he saw one of my boards. I think my 12. I think I took Cedric, and he mentioned that Cedric during fan fest on Saturday said the new rules are going to benefit him tremendously, and he plans on running a lot. So the fact these guys are saying that, I guess we'll still see it, but if they're all starting to say that, I'm guessing all teams are going to say that. So like once I heard it come from like multiple teams on the same week, I'm like, okay, this isn't going to be a unique thing, but it goes to your thing is if they're running that much more, that zero really is going to haunt you. Like unless you go and get a guy that steals 60 bases now instead of, you know, 45, I guess that it could even it out that way. But you get Ryan's much smarter about these kind of analysis things than I have. And it makes a lot of sense when he says it that way, that, it definitely could balloon in a big way. And also could, it really makes me think about the stolen base front. Like how many do we need is what I'm thinking. Like how many we're going to need in the end game. Cause we always kind of have like target numbers for your up, you know, 70, 80 percentile point system. So what are we going to need this year? It's a really interesting conundrum. Cause I've said it forever on any show that I've talked on, mine or others, that the new rules, I'm just kind of, you know, doing my normal thing because how do you quantify new rules? You can't. But hearing all these guys talk about it, you're just like, this is going to be interesting. And really curious to see how that one plays out for sure. Yep. One thing that's fun, it was really fun. This is why I enjoy, you know, talking and texting with you even off the air. I took your guy, then you took my guy.
Man, what was that? You did it first.
I know. That's why I said I did it first. I started the Reds. So, I talked about how I took my first pitcher as a closer and Ryan Pressly in round four. Two picks later, Ryan took Devin Williams. And I was going back and forth between the two, back and forth, back and forth. And in my mind, and I kind of explained it to Ryan via text, was in a 15-teamer, contrary to 12, your number of total saves you need is going to be less to basically get the standing games points you're going to need for this situation. So I wanted to get a guy that's gotten 30 plus year in and year out on the much better baseball team. It's probably going to win another 100 plus games, where Devin Williams is phenomenal. I think Devin Williams probably strikes out more guys, could have a better ratio, might get more wins than Ryan Pressly. I don't know how many saves he's going to get because the Brewers are just always an influx team. They're either like really, really good, or they're going to be selling guys at the deadline. Like you don't, or they might do both. We've seen that too. Like you just don't know what the Brewers are going to do. And if it was a 12, I probably went Williams because I could have, like, I know I could have gotten more depth at closer. Where if I got Pressly here and I told Ryan this in the text. I'm like, I feel comfortable waiting a lot longer now to just get a bunch more spec guys and whatnot. Yeah. So that's kind of where I felt on. It was basically a 15 team decision versus a 12 team, and that's why I liked Ryan Pressly in that regard. So if anything, that should be me saying Ryan's right. This is why you draft Ryan Pressly.
Yeah, it's just funny. That goes all the way back to our early August DC when the room scoffed at your Devin Williams pick and I took Pressly, and we didn't make a bet out of it, but it is funny to see that reversed. They're both elite. They're both excellent. I think if we're trying to project saves, exact save numbers for each of these teams, who knows? Like Pressly's actually a great example of that. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but I believe it was 2021 when the Astros won over 90 games and we're one of the best teams in baseball. Pressly only had like 30 saves and he was their closer all year. Like, it's just, I don't know. It happens. Just get the guy in the role with the gig. Closer wise, while we're on that. So nine, and this is what I've seen in draft season as well. Nine of these 15 teams took their closer in the first five rounds. And I'm not saying you have to do that. There's different ways to win. There's different way to build teams.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think you really need to get a closer in the first five rounds. And this draft played that out like perfectly. Like Camilo Duvall went in the sixth, but after that, it was pretty much nothing until like Bednar in the eighth, maybe Clay Holmes also went in the eighth. Chris Blessing took Clay Holmes. If you're wanting to build a balanced team, at least this early in draft season, when we don't have that news and spring training isn't here yet, you almost have to take a closer in those first five rounds. I think that certainly played out, and it's interesting. Neither of us have taken backed it up with the number two, just because I have not
the number twos that are there.
Yeah. I just have not been in a position where like I'm interested. I'm semi interested in, I'm an open, but I'm semi interested in like Jose Leclerc or Alex Lang at this point in the draft, like the 14th, 15th round. Even then, I'm not going to pull the trigger in the 14th. But there just hasn't been a time where like I'm like, oh, yeah, let me grab this closer outside of those first five rounds.
Yeah, no, it'll be a strictly spec situation unless I go and get like Kyle Finnegan or something, which doesn't feel great. That's kind of where – and that's where I was
looking. No, you don't feel good. You don't feel good clicking that button.
No, and that's where I was looking at, like, do I take another closer or do I go get McCarthy? Do I go get, you know, Estrada, Suarez, and where my team needs were? Like, if I missed on those guys, then the other alternative option a whole round later, not good. Not good. So just give me a spec guy because Finnegan could lose the job. There's just so many things like that. Didn't make it worth the fancy where we can talk, your Evan Phillips of the world, your other guys later. I'd rather go take chances on them in like four or five more rounds.
Did you notice, I think I texted this to you too, but I think a lot of the folks in this draft room listened to us, because the two biggest fades of pretty much any player were Andrés Muñoz, who eventually went, I think at that point, a decent price. He went like, I don't know, 11th. Yeah, he went in the 11th. Andrés Muñoz went in the 11th round. Alexis Diaz didn't go until like pick 190, which I think is his max over the last month. I'm quite positive, actually. So, yes, Alexis Diaz's max was 165. Over the last 10 NFBC drafts, and he went 190 in this one. Kind of like a quiet fist bump. I mean, at 190, you take that chance, I guess. But it was wild to see Munoz and Diaz at the top of our ADP queue for quite some time.
Okay, before I go on the clock, I have to get it from you, and you kind of hinted at it with Bellinger for a second, but you just took May and Bellinger with your last two picks in 12 and 13, two guys that we really didn't talk about, really weren't big fans of, but not saying we were full fades of either. I'll clarify that. You weren't full fades, but you took these two gentlemen that I know you weren't the biggest fans of at the time of the shows. So elaborate, this is where the roster construction, I'm assuming, comes into play more than the like of a player. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's more just so like this is such a Bloomfield draft, my first like 11 picks. Just boring, like dudes who I think you can count on, with maybe the exception of like Tyler O'Neill. I'm banking on a rebound there. But like everyone else that I picked, I mean, my starting pitchers, Scherzer, Fried, Kyle Wright, Lance Lynn, like, I don't know. It's just like, it's not, I don't know. I guess it's boring. I don't want a team of all boring guys. Yes, I can lean that way. Bubba, you're the same. I mean, you have this very similar type of drafting style. But the more I think and kind of look back at some of the drafts that I've done the last few seasons, I'm just too conservative, even in these middle rounds. I think, and I've always said, these middle rounds are where you can get these breakout guys and take your shots, and it doesn't hurt you. I mean, it hurts if it doesn't pan out. Doesn't hurt you that much. So I decided to take my targeted shots on Dustin May and Cody Bellinger in these middle rounds, just because, like, especially with May, like I just listed out the starting pitchers that I have, I think that's the time to take someone like Dustin May. And even last week's episode, we were comparing May to Ryan's Rays, to Jeffrey Springs and Drew Rasmussen, who both went right before Dustin May. I think those two guys are a lot safer than Dustin May is. But I think Dustin May has a ceiling that where Dustin May could be a third round pick next season. So that's the thinking. Bellinger, I don't know, but Bellinger is more. I wanted to keep that 10 to 15 stolen base thing. It is more of a roster construction thing. And I only had one outfielder heading into the 13th round. I kind of screwed that up, where Tyler O'Neill is my only outfielder. So I really need an outfielder. I'm going to go outfielder again. If I'm on the clock during the show in the 14th, but those were the thinkings behind those two guys. Those are kind of my two shots in the middle rounds, and I'm going to kind of go back to conservative Bloomfield after that.
Yeah, I got a couple shots I've queued up for the next few rounds. One might be this round, actually, as I'll be on the clock here in a second. But, yeah, it's going to be fun to see where this goes. We'll probably talk about it next week or something when we do another episode to kind of wrap up the next – you know, we've gone pretty quick overall, I'd say, in a four-hour DC. It's going a decent pace, so it's pretty good. Any final thoughts? Or otherwise, I will make my pick, and we'll go Bloom board shopping.
Let's do it.
All right, so I said I'm on the clock. I mentioned I'm not taking a picture. I told Ryan before the show started, and then I said we have to record before I say everything before the show starts, is I need another third baseman, and it goes a lot. And it was even before I saw Weimer's tweet about it, because I took Eugenio Suarez right after I took Chapman. But we've talked about on recent pockets how, like, you know, we talked about the Justin Turner level, and that's coming up in a few rounds. But the way things jump around these days, I'd be devastated if I waited and came back, because it's going to be a lot of picks before my next pick, that I'd be devastated if I missed out on even the Turner spot of this. And I'd be in that position of, like, just horrific third. Like, I'd be cool taking Turner as my third baseman if he came popping up around the corner type thing. So I'm going third base, and I've been going back and forth between a show topic of Ryan McMahon versus Josh Young. That's been the the topic in my head all since the last, I guess, hour before our show, when I realized I was going to be picking soon and I was going through things. And this is where the taking the chances thing you talked about. Since he's technically my backup, maybe my corner infielder, I'm going to go with Josh Young, thinking maybe he takes that next step to get going over Ryan McMahon, because I mentioned on the last show that I like Ryan McMahon quite a bit, but I think we know who Ryan McMahon is, unless he learns how to elevate the baseball, which might happen. You never know. So I just took Josh Young with my pick in round 14. And again, this is the pockets talking, and it's helping me kind of navigate the minefields, because I knew I wanted to get my second, third baseman pretty darn soon. Otherwise, it's going to get really, really ugly really quick.
It's the pockets talking, but it's also your team talking.
True.
you just said you have that kind of conservative build so far, and this, you know, this is kind of where you're taking your shot. The projections that I have, which is just a blend of HQ and the Bad X, Ryan McMahon and Josh Jung are like the exact same player. 240 batting average to 246 for McMahon, 21 homers to 22, and they both are projected for six steals exactly. Projection is just a median 50th percentile thing. I think that range of outcomes for Ryan McMahon is very narrow. There's a high floor, there's a low ceiling to that. Josh Jung is just the opposite. So it's just funny how two different guys at the same position with the same projection at the same ADP can be, I think, drastically different types of picks, depending what your team's looking at. So that's pretty fascinating. I was going to tell you to, so I did tell you to take a starting pitcher with, you know, more volume floor. And as I look at by ADP, the starting pitchers available to you, it's Andrew Heaney, Sonny Gray, Jack Flaherty.
I think Merrill Kelly.
We should wait.
Merrill Kelly.
I think Merrill Kelly will be around.
I know. That's why I said, I'm like, I got a round or two. I can wait and go shopping. Yeah, there's a couple of guys I got circled for my next pick, either round 15 or round 16. I'll be taking one then, that's for sure. So depends on how Ryan snipes me. But do you want to give a prequel to your next pick, or do you just want to wait?
No, I'll just say I'm going to go, and this is a little bit of a team slash position thing. I'm going to go Andrew Benintendi.
Okay.
My team batting average is at like 257 right now. And so I track batting average, home runs, and steals. Just while I'm drafting, just to make sure I'm like generally balanced. I don't track my pitching categories. I don't track like runs and RBI. Maybe I should, but I don't want to overcomplicate things. So I just track average power and speed. And I am way low in average. So Benintendi should help there. And like I said, I just took Dustin May and Cody Bellinger. So I need to, I think, complement that with someone who I think has a pretty high floor, low ceiling. But Benintendi, I think he's going to bat second in Chicago.
Top of the order for sure.
It's going to be pretty good with, I think, batting in the top of the order of a good lineup with a good batting average. I think he's going to score a bunch of runs. So
don't hate it at all. All right, let's talk Bloom boards. We got two Bloom boards to discuss here, as Ryan's been pumping them out nearly every day, if not every day, like usual. So it's gonna be pretty fun stuff here. And one of them that I'm glad we're talking about here, as I saw him tweet it out the other day, is who doesn't like talking ADP this time of the year? This is what we all like to do. So this is a fun one, because you have your November, December ADPs versus January risers and fallers. Some of these will make tons of sense. Like, hey, they're hurt, they got this, that, or the other. There's a couple of others like, huh, the helium's coming, or someone's balloon got popped. Gets really, really interesting to look at here. So let's start with risers. Let's be positive. Let's talk with the, maybe it's not a positive. We'll see. Let's talk risers here. And it doesn't seem like much, but do you think the Raisel Iglesias jump from 66 to 54 is the concern with closers, or is it because Kenley Jansen signed in Boston and now it's Iglesias season?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. Raisel Iglesias is the highest riser, and I should preface that. So when I do this board, I do it by what I call the value of the pick. So Raisel Iglesias, and actually the top two risers are perfect examples of this. If you rise from like a fourth rounder to a third rounder, that's actually huge. That's a bigger rise than going from like the 18th round to the 15th round. And so every pick in the forecaster we have, there's a formula in in those pages. If anyone wants to know the exact page, I can look it up and let you know. That basically for every ADP, it's a dollar value, and you can make a conversion. And so that's what I'm basing this off of, is the highest like slot value for each pick. And so Iglesias is the highest riser, going just from 66 to 54. And perfect example number two is Esteri Ruiz, who went from 291 all the way up to 238. So like a much bigger rise, but those picks are nowhere near as valuable. So Iglesias, yes, I think it's just, I don't think it's the closer market at all. I think it's just there was some trepidation that Iglesias would, you know, that Atlanta would sign somebody and boot Iglesias from the role, kind of like what happened to Iglesias last year, even though it was a trade. That role seems very safe. And Iglesias, I think even at a 54 ADP, if you're, again, just picking one of those top closers in the first five rounds, Iglesias, there's nothing wrong with him.
You mentioned Esteri Ruiz. We might as well talk about him real quick. 291 to 238. That's a heck of a jump for the kid that we talked about, I believe it was last week. We know the speed is ridiculous. I think it was like 80 something steals between the three levels of the minors last year. And it's just a matter of get on base. But like we've talked about, is the A's, why wouldn't they play him? What do they have to lose by playing him? So he's a very intriguing kind of piece. It's not like the Malik Smith's piece of the past, the Billy Hamilton's of the past. It seems like, to me, it feels different. I don't know why. It's a rabbit, 100% a rabbit. But he's getting quite the bump, Ryan. And I don't know if it's the scare of people being scared of steals, even though we just talked about there should be a plenty, but we'll see.
I think this was all just the trade. So Ruiz was traded December 12th. From Milwaukee, like I don't think he was going to play much there at all. So I think this is just the trade opening up playing time and people taking a shot at Ruiz at 212. So just know, or sorry, 238. Just know if you are, and we talked about this last week, we did our little ADP battle between Ruiz, Mondesi, and
Jorge
Mateo. Wow, we both remembered that off the top. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Just know, like, if you see a Seri Ruiz of like a 250 ADP, that's not right anymore. You're gonna have to pay up relatively closer to like 200 if the way things are trending. And so you gotta factor that in if that makes sense for your squad.
For sure, a couple other guys that kind of got the boost due to new faces, new places. Justin Turner got about a 45 pick bump. We know Abreu's finally getting his love. 15 picks, still maybe not enough love, depends on who you talk to, but he's getting a jump. JD Martinez got about a 25-30 pick jump, and Benintendi, who you're going to be drafting here shortly, getting about a 20 pick jump. So those all kind of make sense based on transactions, unless you have something else in mind there.
Nope, those you just kind of nod your head. There are a couple where there has been no news about the player and they have jumped, which I thought was even more.
That's where I was going with this. I think Gabriel Moreno, because of the trade, he jumped quite a bit too. But Christian Javier's helium is happening. He's gone up 10 picks from 71 to 61. Don't think that's done yet. I think that's got probably maybe 10 more picks in it. It's coming. It's still coming. The other one is your boy, Kevin Gausman's gone from 65 to 59. Like you said, it doesn't seem like much at six picks. But that is jumping from round five to round four in a 15-team draft. That is a big deal when things are all said and done. And there's been tweets everywhere about Kevin Gausman. So both these guys might be creeping. And I got two reasons behind this, and I'll give you the floors. A, they're very talented. There's lots of chatter. Yes. Two, we talked about it in the winter that as we get closer to March, all these pitchers are coming up. That's just how it goes. So as you know, as the elites go from round two to round one or round three to round two, well, round five and six could become now round four and five. That's just how this is going to work. So these guys are going to keep moving is the way I see it.
I think it's more just Christian Javier showing up in every starting pitcher article. Kevin Gausman is starting to show up in every. I'm not saying like I'm enough or both of us combined, or we had both of these guys in our top 12, I believe, top 12 starting pitchers.
Yeah.
It's not just us. I mean, Christian Javier is getting a ton of love from a bunch of folks if you just log on Twitter. So I do think, especially with Javier, like this, I think this is 100% the case of where the high stakes market is following a little bit the industry lead here in terms of bumping up Javier. I can't think of any other reason why Javier would jump from 71 to 61. Gausman, I don't know. He does show up on the list. It is just from 65 to 59. So it's not like a huge jump, but it is half around and where he's going. And I guess there has been some news around him with the addition of Dalton Varsho and Kevin Kiermaier with the improved outfield defense for Gausman, who had like one of the worst BABIPs of all time for starting pitcher last season. There is that. But then there's the other part of the news with the walls moving in a little bit. I guess that came in kind of late that might go against Gausman. So I don't know. I just think Gausman, Javier starting to move up more so than any other pitcher. Clay Holmes was another one that I noticed who moved up for not really any reason. Maybe just folks are more, maybe everyone's listening to Ryan Roof, as they probably should. Yeah. Maybe, you know, people are just more confident either in the health and the role. Clay Holmes has gone from 117 up to 101 in January. So.
Yeah, it's probably with like Jansen going elsewhere, Chapman going elsewhere, all these guys that Kimbrel going elsewhere kind of took a lot of that fluff out of the way, hopefully, is maybe what that came down to. We'll see. I'm kind of bummed because I've been targeting Holmes a lot of places, like round 10-ish in drafts. That's not going to happen much longer. Let's go to some of the fallers here. The easy ones, Trevor Story, gone. Gregory Soto, traded. Can even say Bryce Harper. We know the situation there. No really surprise. Frankie Montas, if you haven't heard yet, he might have season-ending surgery still. That's coming. Matt Mervis, not even on the 40-man, starting in AAA. Jorge Mateo, we talked about him last week. We can maybe talk about that again. Sir Anthony Dominguez, too many pitchers in Philadelphia. I'm just going to get rid of the easy ones here. I'll leave the rest for a little discussion. Again, like you said with Gossman and Javier, not saying people listen to us, but Shane McClanahan is falling in drafts, Ryan. He's gone from 35 to 42 again, seven picks, but now we're changing rounds almost. And I don't know. It's, you know, the buzz that was Shane McClanahan at one point in time, even like mid-year last year when he was rolling, he's like, is he the number one pitcher to take ahead of Burns and Cole? Like all those conversations, you don't hear anything. But I have like what all the Javier articles and Gossman articles, I haven't heard a peep about Shane McClanahan unless it's we tweet out our rankings and they think we're idiots. But I've not seen any productions of an article or anything about Shane McClanahan. So I wonder if he's going to fall some more.
I don't think so. I don't know. We'll see. I think if anything, when McClanahan comes back in spring and looks healthy and is throwing hard, assuming that happens, I think he's going to shoot right back up. Actually, I think a healthy Shane McClanahan will be an easy second round pick in March. I mean, just the thing, it's just the opportunity cost right now with McClanahan. Like it's a risk. In my opinion, again, you might be passing on a top three starting pitcher here. In my opinion, you just have like, why take that risk when there are other starting pitchers that are right there that you can just kind of bank on. So like for example, I took Scherzer in our draft, which was like five picks after Shane McClanahan. But in our draft, Aaron Nola, Brandon Woodruff, our two boys, Carlos Rodon, Strider, all went before Shane McClanahan. So like, I think that's what the market is. And those are all great pitchers. Like, I think they're just taking the perceived higher floor and less injury risk with those guys than they are McClanahan.
Yeah, I agree with that. And a little behind the curtains, I am talking with Jason Collette this week for the Rays preview pod, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say because he gave some good information in an FPAS with us, and there's probably more news since then that has come out. So really curious to hear the McClanahan story because eventually, like you said, the risk and where he's going in like round three or so, you know, you could have a fun little wager with someone and say, if Dustin May hits his ceiling, he can outperform Shane McClanahan. I'm not saying he's going to, but I'm saying that's a fun debate. Like where you're taking your risk is what I'm saying. Like your draft cost versus like result. It's interesting. It's an interesting predicament to be in. And that's why you mentioned about when you want to take your chances and when you don't, there's an example of why. So something along those lines. Lou Bob, 43 to 49, again, only six picks, but he is falling. And I've noticed it in a lot of drafts I'm in. He's slowly falling backwards. I don't know if it's just all the talk. I know I'm guilty of it, and others are of, dude, just can't stay healthy. It's scary. Like, the talent's ridiculous. We know how good he is, like, so on and so forth. But until I know he's going to stay healthy, it's too risky for me at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why he's fall. Like, if anything, I thought he might rise because he's a little bit further from, like, the sting of people who had him on their teams last year, like me and TGFBI, kind of forgiving him as we enter the new year and that sort of thing. But I don't know, a six pick drop is, you know, it's six picks in the fourth round. I mean, that is something. I'm not really sure why Robert is dropping. It could just be kind of random variance, but I will say, like, he might be one of the few guys where I do take that quote unquote risk in the early rounds. Later in March, if he's looking good in the spring, I think dude's ceiling is unbelievable. And the injuries that he had last season, while yes, there were a lot of them, and maybe the kind of the dizziness, the lightheadedness thing could linger, but like it's kind of it's wrist, it's hand stuff. Yes, it can sap power, but it's not injuries that linger. It's not soft tissue stuff that could linger. So that I think, you know, Robert could be somebody who I'm taking, you know, kind of putting my neck out a little bit in March if he's looking good.
If there's a handful of guys early in drafts, I don't disagree with you on that, that are worth taking a chance on, because he's got that ability. With the one argument I've seen mentioned and I kind of agreed with, and maybe it like took me back to off the edge for now, is when you look at Lou Bob, we always hoped he would have this power. He's never really showcased, given he's done 11 and 56 games, 13 and 68, 12 and 98. Maybe there is a 25 home run guy there, potentially. It's just, I guess it's 25, 15, what you want at that point. That's what I got to consider. I think that's a floor, though. I think there could be a ceiling there. It's like you said, taking the chance. He's one of the conundrum guys. He's one of the conundrum guys out there. That's just,
I mean, I would say the power's been there. Like, it wasn't there last year. But almost 12.5% barrel rate in 2020 and 21. Max EV is like 116, 117. I think he's got it, man.
Yeah, he's got to elevate the ball more. That's for dang sure. The ground ball rate 45% last year. Oof, that's no bueno. But we won't talk about Lou Bob anymore. The other guys on this list, you know, John Birdie is kind of logical reasons behind that. Jorge Mateo, who we've mentioned. And then Josh Rojas, Luis Rengifo. I guess Rojas out of that whole group kind of surprised me the most, dropping from 190 to 214. I don't like to say I disagree with it, but for a guy that's pretty much locked into playing time, I think, unless something's totally changed that I'm not aware of, that seems a little interesting to me.
I mean, the one thing with Rojas at HQ, we haven't projected 15% playing time at second base, 5% at DH, 55% at third base. So we see him mostly as a third baseman. The one big change there was
Longo.
Was, yeah, your former boy, Longoria signing, which I don't know. I might buy the dip on Rojas here. Like, again, may not be a full timer at any single position on opening day. But he's versatile enough that when an injury does strike, he will be one of the first names called upon. And let's be honest, how long is Evan Longoria going to last in the season at third base? So
just some friendly advice. I'd recommend buying the dip for your next draft. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, not this one.
Shouldn't buy it in this draft. Just throwing it out there.
Who else did you bring up? Birdie, I understand. Like, yeah. Segura signed.
Rengifo's kind of, they keep adding so many utility players. It's kind of a mess there. Yep. Mateo, we talked about him. So that's kind of all of them.
It's funny to see Matt Mervis. We didn't talk about, but he's kind of been pushed out. Matt Mervis was a darling, especially at the AFL when we were out there in Arizona, from 267 down to 322. That's just a playing time move.
They already said he's starting in AAA, so
kind of not shuts the door. Like, he'll be up at some point, but it is interesting, the Mateo, not to go back to it again, but Mateo versus Ruiz, who now have the same ADP, but early in draft season, November, December, Mateo was 195, Ruiz was 291. 100 pick difference, and now they're the same. So, again, those rabbits, they move around a lot.
They bounce around, they say. Let's talk stolen bases here. This is the other Bloom board we're going to discuss. And this stuff, we kind of hinted at it, I think, last episode, actually, because some of the guys in our pockets here, first half attempts for second half attempts. We mentioned, well, he's not on this page, but CJ Abrams, who we both like. He's got like almost all of his steals except one with the Nationals. And surprise, surprise, one of the top gainers here from one attempt in the first half to 11 in the second half was Lane Thomas. So it kind of brings the question, that's even before this new stolen base environment comes into play. So this is interesting, the strategy with the Nats potentially looking to run a lot more because they don't have a lot of power in that lineup. So some of these guys could be quite nice. And Lane Thomas, it became more interesting to me, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I had no idea he was the top gainer in stolen base attempts. And just real quick on this board, I generally try not to look at like half splits for hitters. I just think it can be really noisy. Whereas pitchers, I do think like pitchers can change a lot in velocity and pitch mix, that sort of thing. But I think stolen base attempts, there's a lot of nuance and context to it, where if you can pick up on guys who either ran a lot kind of quietly in the second half, maybe that continues, especially Bubba, like you said, with the new rule changes, like the guys who are going to run are probably like the first guys you want to look at are the guys who ran the most in the second half last year. So Lane Thomas was very interesting to me. The most interesting to me was Stephen Kwan, though.
Yep.
And that got a lot of kind of responses on the tweet. Stephen Kwan had the third highest increase in stolen base attempts from first to second half, went from seven up to 17 stolen base attempts in the second half. And for how often that guy gets on base, like, that could be huge if he keeps running like that next season. Like, I think if Stephen Kwan is maybe I made this comp on the podcast, but I think of him as like a Luis Arraez, David Fletcher, and he's absolutely not.
Yeah, because I know we had this discussion. It was like right after I had Roof on to do the Guardians episode, and he opened my eyes to Stephen Kwan between the stolen bases, the batting average, the shift could help him a ton, like scoring runs at the top of the order. There's so much more to like about him compared to your normal kind of boring batting average guys. Like he could maybe run into 8-ish home runs, maybe more. You never know, but I doubt it. But he could score 100 runs. He could steal you 25 bags or something like, and hit over 300. He could do some crazy stuff, which makes him much more appealing if you put the right build together. Much more appealing to me. So yeah, and then the proof's in the pudding with the second half numbers you mentioned there. Same team, Andrés Giménez went 8-15. Maybe it's a Cleveland thing, something to think about as well. It could be a philosophy in Cleveland because we know J Ram even runs. You know, you got Ahmed Rosario will run. Yep. So you got guys there that'll run. So it's something to keep in mind. It makes you even think, like, I'm speculating they play might be good for five max, but you know, your Naylors and your Bells might get you a couple bags now that they didn't get you before. Like, give you a little Anthony Rizzo vibe type deal. So I'm not guaranteeing, I'm just saying the team as a whole might run some more. So it's interesting to see Cleveland on there twice in this list.
One thing, and we've talked about Vladdy before, and so he pops on this with 10 stolen base attempts in the second half. One thing I just thought of, if we knew with certainty that Vlad Jr. would attempt 20 steals next season, what would his ADP be?
Because if he attempted 20, let's say he steals 13 or 14.
Yeah, right. He went 8-for-10 the second half last year. I mean, it's super noisy, but yeah, say he has 15 steals next season.
If he had 15 steals to go with, like, say 35 home runs,
and I know you're not the biggest flat guy, but like I'm just saying, like,
no, but like I'm just saying, hit like 35 home runs and then hitting like 295. I'm just taking, like, he could outdo all of that. He's a top 3 pick, 4 pick.
It's just interesting. And. Yeah. And, like, I mean, I want to say fall into the trap, but when I was talking about lower stolen base guys at the beginning, when I was talking about Freddie Freeman in my draft, comparing Freeman to Yordan Alvarez and Vlad Jr., like, I fell into that, like, Vlad Jr. and Yordan Alvarez are not the same from a stolen base standpoint.
At least they both went right before you.
And they both went right before me. Great.
Made it easier.
But it's just interesting to, like, and there was a manager change in Toronto. Like, I mean, there is context behind this move that was like maybe some of this sticks, but it's just interesting if we knew for sure that Vlad would steal 15 bags. Like, I agree. I think he's top five, maybe top three next season.
Yeah, I'm thinking top three. Depends on your draft, of course. Some people might still just say no way, but if you were to put up those numbers, like, let's just say he goes and hits 43 home runs, hits 310. And that means he probably has 100 and something RBI runs, like 125 RBIs. Like, he's putting up almost an Aaron Judge season, almost not, but you know what I mean? Like, that's a ridiculous stat line, especially for first base. Like, that's just nuts. So yeah, that's an interesting proposition. That's why it was a couple years back. Guilds was all in on Vlad as like a fourth rounder or something that year. He went nuts. He's obviously not a fourth rounder now, but just even pushing him up 5 or 6 picks. If you think he has that kind of ceiling, that's how you win things. So it's just as a guy, like you talked about taking the risk. It's interesting discussion there. Bobby Witt Jr. was just, I guess, interesting to me because 15 attempts in the first half, 22 in the second half. It feels like, you know, it depends on where you go. Some people are in love with him. John L. loves Bobby Witt. I've become, the more I've looked into Bobby Witt this offseason, a much bigger fan of Bobby Witt. Because at first, like say November, I didn't understand his ADP at all. I'm like, okay, whatever. I get it now. I definitely get it. I can see the upside there. So the fact he ran even more in the second half, interesting to me. Maybe nothing to it. It's only 7 more bags after he already had 15, but it was interesting to me.
Yeah, and 22 attempts in the second half is the highest of anyone on this list. That's a huge number.
Anybody else? The only guys were Judge and Nico Horner.
No, not Elvis.
Yeah, not Elvis. He's still left the building. He has not returned yet. So we don't even know. Like, somehow he's, my only guess is he's asking for too much money or a guaranteed starting job. And people are like, no. So that's the only holdup. I think he's
not in Boston. You know that.
Idiots. Let's go to the opposite of this one. The more first half, less second half. This is the conundrum I have with Manny Machado. We've talked about it on these shows. 8 attempts in the first half, 2 in the second half. I love Machado. You can almost pencil in his stat line every single year. It just feels like the steals are just kind of dwindling or much more inconsistent, I guess, than before. And where you're drafting him, I feel like there's other alternatives. So it's very tough for me.
I'm a lot more optimistic. And one of this is the beauty of doing these boards is there were a few kind of responses to the tweet where Manny Machado like almost couldn't walk by the end of last season. Like his ankle was pretty messed up and he wasn't going to run. So like there is that. You are assuming that the ankle is going to be fine this season. It probably will. I do think Machado kind of maybe not snaps right back to the guy he was from a stolen base target, but I don't think he's just going to stop running again, unless the ankle is like a chronic thing that just never gets right. That is someone who I would be interested in seeing. One of the things we look at HQ that's for spring training stats that matter is stolen bases. I'd be interesting to see if Machado runs a couple times in the spring, because I think injury was behind a lot of that for him.
That makes sense. We mentioned two guardians on the rising. We have Miles Straw falling back. Not like we're running to get Miles Straw, but that kind of stood out after we just praised the guardians up top.
Was he even a full-time player at the end of the season?
That's what I'm starting to think. I'd have to look into it. There could be a lot more reasons why on that one. Yeah. Juan Soto didn't run. Juan Soto didn't do much of anything in San Diego, so we kind of mulligan that one. The Rosarena one, I'll still take 19 attempts in the second half. Yeah, 25 in the first. Not worried about that one.
Yeah.
Trey Turner, not too worried there either, all things considered. But Shohei going from 14 in the first half to only 6 in the second half. Now, I don't remember him being too banged up. Maybe I'm missing something there. Is this a, hey, we need you to keep pitching, don't get hurt thing? Or is it like, was it a philosophy change in Anaheim as the season went on? Because didn't Joe Maddon get bounced at one point in time? Or is that after the season? I can't remember now because Nevin's there now. That's one that I'm curious about with Shohei going from 14 to 6.
Yeah, I'm trying to look that up on the fly. If Maddon was gone midseason or not, I don't know. It could just be like the Angels were out of it, and there was really no reason for Ohtani to push it. That would be like my top guess. Like, why would he run? Why would they run? But who's to say that doesn't happen again this coming season? Now Ohtani is. I mean, this is his contract. Like he's due for some bucks at the end of the season, and if he shows that he can still steal 20 plus bags, I think that would only help him on the open market. So I think I'm not that worried about Ohtani. I think it was just like there was nothing to play for and kind of playing out the string and focusing more on pitching. So that's my kind of take on it, but it is interesting to see that from 14 to 6.
Tommy Edmonds going 22-13. I like to jab all the Tommy Tanks fans out there. I did it all second half last year. I like Tommy Edmonds. I don't like the price you have to pay and the love he gets for what he does, but that's just me. I also like to rile feathers.
The quick thing with Edmonds was it's batting order. Yep. It is. He runs when he leads off. When he's not at the top of the order, he does not run nearly as often. And so I think like it's very hard to predict lineup spot. It changes all the time. That sort of thing.
You know what's ironic?
But
is the guy that's taking his spot in the lineup, Newt Barr? Mm-hmm. Everyone that's loved Tommy Edmonds loves Newt Barr now.
Is Newt Barr?
That's like, it seems like there's a trend in the fantasy Twitter world. It just makes them like, you guys yelled at us when I said, Edmonds will not lead off the entire season, blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, blah, blah. Like, he's not going to. He's not. And it happened. So I even went on, I think it was Potapalooza last year. Or no, whatever. What was the midseason?
That was Potapalooza.
No, was in the middle of the season?
I think. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Whatever was midseason. And I had to do a 5 hot takes each or something. And mine was Tommy Edmonds wouldn't steal 10 bags in the second half. I got close. I got really close. Because people, Spore and others told me I was an idiot. I got really close. So
I mean, the dude still
he still put up great stats.
I would take last year. He stole 32 bags.
Most of it, it's because they're my friends that are diehard Edmund guys, and I just want to poke the bear.
What's fun about this game, man.
Exactly. It's a game. That's the most important thing to realize when we're making fun of each other. It's a game. Yeah. So remember that. And then the last one here, and this one does concern me a bit. And I know I think there was like a little bit of an injury or whatnot, but J-Rod, Julio Rodriguez, 25 steals in the attempts in the first half, 7 in the second half. Vladito had more attempts than J-Rod in the second half of the season. And that really concerns me. It really does. I might be overthinking it, but to have a guy at his age, all of a sudden just feels like it's shut down from running. That doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy, Ryan.
Yeah, I think about this one. It was injury related. So Julio Rodriguez diving back to first right before the All-Star break. I don't know if you remember this, but there was
an uprising.
I think it was his hand or wrist.
Okay.
Diving back into first, but then he participated in the Home Run Derby few days later. And then I believe coming out of the All-Star break hit the IL and people thought he got hurt in the Home Run Derby. What was he doing there? And that sort of thing. So there was that. There was also a back issue in the second half. I think Seattle was just protecting Julio Rodriguez as they probably should. But does that all just go away and we forget about it for this season? Like, that's my kind of retort back is like, if he gets banged up at all, or if that back injuries don't just go away all the time. I know Rodriguez is young and that sort of thing could have been a one-time thing. He did steal a base in the postseason, which is, I guess, notable, but I don't know if he steals 25 or 30 this season.
That's
like
my issue.
There is. I did see a note like Scott Servais, and this is what you were saying earlier, Bubba. Like, everyone says they want to run and do all this. Scott Servais did say that Julio could get 30 bags this year. So there is that. They are at least saying that they're confident in him running. But it is just like one again where Julio Rodriguez is going. Like, if you're taking him second overall, it's those nitpicky things you need to consider, in my opinion.
Well, let me just, this will be the last thing we wrap it up, because this was an issue I had in my 12-teamer I was in. I had the third overall pick. I took Kyle Tucker. And I know it's controversial, but it's A, I'm getting my guy. A, it's a 12, or B, it's a 12-team league where I can kind of do different things in that league. But I was looking between J-Rod and Tucker. And I'm comfortable with Tucker getting me 25 plus steals, like we've seen that, and 30 plus home. Like, we've seen it multiple years, even not hitting a good spot in the order. So I had that J-Rod thought in my head. I did. And I was like, it was tough. I even passed on Judge in that point. That was one of the hardest picks I've had to make. Like, I want like the fifth pick in every draft. Just give me the fifth.
Tucker's
pick.
Fine. Tucker won't.
Oh, I love Tucker. Tucker's one of my guys. And I don't have him anywhere else. So I finally got him. I took my guy. I did my thing.
Those are some hard names to pass, but Tucker won't. He won't disappoint you in the first round. He won't have the I mean, J-Rod could go like 40-40.
Yeah. Tucker ain't going 40-40.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was my that I just wanted to bring up my train of thought. Like,
yeah, that's interesting. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting is one way to put it, yes. All right. We have one listener question, because the other question was Bullpen Guru just having some fun with us. And I did make my pick, so we're good. We kind of talked about our targets too. But CJ Baseball has a question. Franco, I'm referring to Wander Franco, I believe. I know he struggled last year, but doesn't this feel like the breakout year and the last chance to get him, relatively speaking, cheap? I mean, I like Seager, but I'd rather load up on power and pitching and get a good third baseman in rounds 1 through 5 and look to get Wander in round 6 or 7. I've let my thoughts about Wander be well known that I'm just out and tell him, prove it, kid. Talent's there. He's young. I get it. Prove it. That's just my thought. I can't keep doing that dance.
Yep. And so there will be a year. So full agree. There will be a year where we don't reap those rewards. And I think it's going to happen. Wander Franco is an elite talent. Wander Franco, I think, is a much better prospect, real life player than he is fantasy player. Career 13 home runs, 10 steals in 600 at bats. Like, I, until I see the home runs or the steals from a fantasy standpoint, I'm not really going for it. And this proved out in our draft. And in our draft in the sixth round, I took Dansby Swanson. Wander Franco went two picks later. And so, I mean, I would take Swanson over Franco. Again, knowing full well, like, you know, that's a conservative pick. Swanson doesn't have that, like, huge ceiling, and Franco could absolutely be a second rounder sometime next season if he hits for power and runs. I don't know. I think that's a big if. So, at least in 2023.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, we'll see. Like you said, I've been willing to be wrong on a lot of guys, prove it type situations. Wander's one of them. So just prove it. I'll admit it and we'll move on. I'm totally fine with that. More often than not, it works in our favor, at least for a year or two before it happens. So yeah. I'll play that game. Any final thoughts, Bloom, as we are in the round 14 in our draft, which will be fun. Even come Thursday, we'll probably be in 24, 25, hopefully by then, I'd hope. See where that comes along. It's about the halfway point. We'll got another pocket of ADP to talk about. So, yeah, final thoughts.
Oh, just getting closer. We've got, I don't know, this is like, they say like February is like the worst month of the year for sports. Probably is, but like I know we're two big golf fans and seeing, being able to watch golf Thursday, Friday, a little bit Saturday, Sunday as schedules persist and prep for drafts and that sort of thing. It's a great time of year, man. And yeah, we're going to, I don't know, like I said at the top, probably do twice a week for a little while. And then still on Thursdays do our ADP pockets. So we'll keep on going.
Yeah, we'll keep on a truck. And yeah, you mentioned the golf thing. No one really cares. But usually Ryan and I have like MLB Network on, but we both have YouTube TV. So I've had golf on the last few episodes. Like I have Pebble Beach replaying on my background right now. So the where I was going with this, bright side, we'll have Scottsdale on TV next Thursday night. Which will be freaking awesome. So
we have been there, not the same year, but we've both been there. And I don't know, man. Maybe we won't have MLB Network on our TV.
If they screw that one up, they don't need to host the podcast. But yeah, if they screw this up, my God. All right, we'll wrap it up there. You can get Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am on Twitter at BDentric. And thanks for listening, everybody. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 39. Catch you guys next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.